My name is Alexander Edelopma, and you're listening to the Fotografiska Tallinn podcast. My guest today is Evelyn Penchichova, who is a visual creative specializing in photography and art direction. Informed by her background in fine art and new media studies, Penchichova's practice combines academic research with an interest in contemporary culture to create a unique aesthetic space in which the conceptual meets the visual. Her exhibition, Mirror, which is a combination of the words me, mirror, and error, can be seen in Fotografiska Tallinn. You can find her at evelynpenchichova.com, which is evelynpenchichova.com, and at evelyn_Penchichova on Instagram. We had a beautiful conversation about her childhood work process and the fascinating state of the world today. Do enjoy. Did you have any dreams today?
Actually, last days I have a lot of dreams, but I don't remember any from tonight. So either there hasn't been any or I just don't remember them.
Okay, but do you have a view on dreams, or what do you think dreams are for, or why do we have them?
Interesting question. I think about it quite a lot, as I have a lot of intense dreams. And sometimes I'm searching in some kind of signs in them, like what is the dream trying to tell to me? But also I'm aware, like sometimes you have a bad dream, nightmare, that maybe it's not a sign, you know, like I don't think that it's necessarily always a warning for future. It's more shows us what is on our minds, what is concerning us, what is worrying us. And the dream is just, it's like this medium between our subconscious, something we feel, but we sometimes cannot admit it, or it's not on this like first plane of thinking, and dream is just trying to remind us of that. Sometimes I even get like inspiration in dream. And for example, when I'm working a lot, especially on some kind of very organizational or technical task, or before a shoot or before a project, I usually end up in this state of half dream when I'm kind of working. And it's crazy because it's this like endless loop of something I'm doing for a day. And sometimes I even come to idea through that. I almost like solve the problem and then I wake up and reflect on it and try it even.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about your childhood? Where did you grow up, and what was your childhood like?
I grew up in Slovakia. I'm from the capital city, Bratislava, but most of my childhood I grew up in this town, which is kind of on the outskirts of Bratislava. I grew up in this very usual housing estate. I don't know if you also have them in Tallinn. These like post-Soviet housing blocks, we call them bitoka, you know, like these buildings where a lot of people live next to each other. And I grew up in this housing estate, which is built to the square. And I always tell this story because I even find it like connected with my practice, that our only view was the view inside of the housing block. So I would always look at this huge amount of windows, that would be my only things to look at. And in that also observing people through like limited viewpoint, which window offers to you. And often when people were asking me like about my beginning with photography, of course I was not photographing it, but I think that this like rectangular shape and kind of trying to see the story through it also influenced me. But I mean, my childhood, maybe try to ask more specific, because I think like childhood is such a big part of life, which influences you in many ways. So it's hard to like pick.
Did you have any favorite books as a child, or did your parents read to you?
Actually, books were my favorite toy, I would say. And my father even taught me to read before I went to school. Like, not when I was a really small child, but I could read even before I learned it in school. And I loved books. My parents were reading to me. And then I was reading, even to the point of the obsession, that I would like spend a lot of time in the library. And I was quite a Bookworm, I think it's called. And I was reading at that time a lot of fiction. I don't read much fiction anymore. And it almost felt that I could live the stories through the books, through the text. And it was really feeding my imagination. I was also writing a little bit, inventing my own stories, which again reflects a little bit on my practice. So book always had a big influence on me until this day, actually.
Can you tell me some of your favorite fiction books from childhood?
Nothing so, I don't look at it as so interesting nowadays, but I was reading a lot of these like books about spies and detectives and kind of adventurous. I don't read this stuff anymore, but I remember I wanted to be a spy or a detective. That's also why I was like spying on people through the windows and trying to like find out something about their life. So yeah, this is something I really remember because I read a lot of that.
Have you seen the movie Rear Window by Alfred Hitchcock?
Yes, yes.
Yes, that reminds me of your apartment building.
Yeah, even now, there's actually when I travel. I mean, this year I couldn't travel, previous year. But before I used to travel a lot for work. And even if I would be in a different city, always in the night, I would go for a walk. And it was always my like favorite activity to just like walk through the streets and stop by and look at people's houses and sometimes even to see some action there, this kind of observer, unobserved observer of a situation.
Mm-hmm. Besides reading books, did you have any other favorite activities as a child?
I was always this child, also teenager, interested in a lot of things. Even the school, I liked most of my classes, most of my subjects. I actually loved to go to school. And I was quite good in mathematics and physics, but I was also interested in history, literature, a lot of sports. I was playing quite a lot of sports and like changing from one to the other, also like playing some musical instruments. So I would really be this child, like curious and interested in things around. That's also what my parents tell me, that like in my week I would have it like filled with activities and so quite a lot of things.
And how did you get to be interested in art, in photography, and how would you describe the style of art that you do?
Get this question quite a lot. Also, like the story which I told you, or like the setting, it might be related to it. Because, for example, when I look at this, like childhood or teenage years, I was never really encountering art or photography. I grew up in a background which is like lower middle class, I would say. So we would not be working class also. So we would not go to galleries or talk about art. So I didn't have the contact with art in an institutional way. But I always believe that it's not just about it. And basically everything I've seen, whether it was like books or movies or situation world around me, conversations with people and this curiosity was something which, and still is, something which I find as origin of my interest in. I usually don't use word art that much because it's quite difficult for me to define, but in storytelling. And as I told you, I was writing when I was a teenager, and visual was, I used to have quite bad eyesight. I was wearing glasses all of my childhood and teenage years. And only when I was 19, I went for the surgery. And that was also kind of like breaking point for me, because after the surgery, I realized that like all my previous life, I couldn't really see. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could see forms. I could see what is what, but only after this discovered this like absolute passion for detail and for colors, for for everything around me. So I think like at this point, I started to be more interested in the communication through visual, visual storytelling. And only later, I decided to study art, which I still do. So I went to the university and then it got on a bit more like academic level.
And what did you use to write when you were a child? Was it like stories, fiction
also
as well?
Yeah. Fiction about kind of my life. So I could be a protagonist or like somebody else could be a protagonist, but I would again like live it. It felt when I'm writing it that I'm living it, experiencing it, feeling it. And this is also in my current work, which I often say that everything is in a way autobiographical because it's all like issues and concerns which are related to my thinking and my emotion, but at the same time, it's not just I use myself to explore that, but also I want to say a bigger story, as I know that I'm not the only person with these issues and thoughts, and that's something I'm trying to reflect.
And the way that you said that you only saw shapes or you didn't have too good eyesight as a child, when I've been looking at your works very often have very strong contrasts and very strong forms. Do you think your experience as having bad eyesight as a child informed your work nowadays?
In this, I don't know. Actually, never thought about it because it's true. I usually use like quite clear composition, but at the same time, my work is a lot about detail in this composition. So I would say that it's this like contrast and even this like working in layers, like how could I see before what you also see when you look at my photograph or any of my works. At the first sight, you see some kind of the pattern, but then there is the next step of like discovering the detail, which is actually very important because it also tells something from the story. So I would say that it's combination of both of that, like how I also felt in this experience that suddenly by discovering these details, I would see something very important, something which I was missing. And I think also if you don't see the details of my work, you are also like missing the entry point to another layer of its meaning.
Mm-hmm. And your work has such a wide reach, like you do many, many different things. And I was so fascinated. I was watching your work from last year. I have to read what it was called, Ninesome Sorcery. Is that right?
Yes.
And I was so fascinated by it. If people want to have a short look, they can see it on your website. And but I was watching it and I was just so mesmerized because it was so beautiful and it was so rich and there was so much in it. And because you and I were pretty much the same age, we're the same generation, and mm-hmm. it is so fascinating for me to see how my generation approaches art and like what we can bring to this world. And this is why when I see somebody like you and when I see your works, it makes me so happy that our generation is doing something that is so beautiful and so deep. But with the Ninesome Sorcery, do you want to walk me through the process, how it came to be and how mm-hmm. many people are involved in it? And what does it mean for you?
Yeah, of course, I would love to. Ninesome Sorcery represents more my current way of working and the approach I want to take at the moment, which is largely based on collaboration. I really believe in collaboration and the way how people can connect, even people working with different media, and create this like Gesamtkunstwerk, they call it. So like the artwork which kind of encapsulates many different attitudes, approaches. So for example, Ninesome Sorcery is a collaborative work done with Enes Gutsch, who is my current very important collaborator, a 3D artist, Zeynep Schilling, graphic designer, and sound duo Labor, Farah Nezahatam and Colin Hacklander, in collaboration with the vocalist Hani Moitahedi. Basically, we did this project, this audiovisual piece, originally for Berlin Atonal, which is biggest and very nice audiovisual festival in Berlin. And so the work was performed there as a live act. It's quite complex work where the visual reacts to the sound. Concept-wise, it's based a lot on a fictional sci-fi book from Reza Negrestani called Cyclonopedia, which is basically the story of oil as this force, kind of conscious force, which overtakes the world. And it shows this force, oil. Oh, sorry if I will be like too confusing. It is. I'm just trying to like grasp the complexity.
No. Go on. Oil. You're doing perfect. It's go into as much detail as you want.
Okay. So basically, think oil as this matter, which is composed of dead bodies, like bodies of fossil fuels and plants, which is accumulated under the earth and kind of carrying this like atmosphere of death or like process of decay, which we are as humanity taking from the earth and fueling capitalism. I don't want to say capitalism, but like fueling industry and greed to the extent which is, as we know already, very harming. I mean, the book is not necessarily about this only, but like how we, like I also wrote a little bit of text like inspired by Reza Negrestani, that oil is this object of desire and the means of destruction, that it's almost like the most valuable thing which we know today, like which is really like our world runs on it, and like a lot of conflicts runs on it also. And this is also what Ninesome Sorcery deals with. So it unfolds in three chapters. First one is called The Wheel, second one Cyclone, and the third one Xerodrome. It's all expressions which are used by Reza Negrestani as well. And basically the first one is about this ever-turning wheel. On the bottom part, you kind of see this like natural element oil is created from. And on the upper part, you can see all the symbols of like industry and production, and they are turning each other. So like as the industry is using it, it's taking it from the bottom, and the oil is in the middle. But what is also important is that this wheel is not endless, because the resources which are used for this production are not endless. So at the end, while the industrial part of the wheel is still turning, you can see that the bottom part is being exhausted. And basically, you see at the end of the chapter, kind of zoom in on this one silhouette which appears on the top, which is actually maybe good to speak about it, because I know that it's like a reference hard to grasp. And it's the zoom in on the sculpture, which was like second symbol of Rome. It's this lion biting a horse on the neck. And we also like it's used as a reference of this like city or the culture which was taken through the indulgence and greed to its collapse. So this is kind of like what the first chapter represents. The second chapter, Cyclone, it's basically this flight through the landscape, which in the beginning appears from the distance, almost as seeing a continent on the map. But then it comes closer to something which can be seen as a city. It's the all of these visuals are created in 3D by me and NS, and we are using a little bit different approach in each chapter. And in this part, it's 3D scans of Aleppo. And this part relates to a lot to like how oil fuels also conflict, like how certain part of the world are getting actively destroyed in the interest of power and money, sometimes also because they were blessed by having this oil. And so we used this city and kind of created this like fictional, in a way, like kind of composite of it. And with the camera, we are flying through its walls. It also reminds a little bit of a drone, with the sound, which is again like certain reference to warfare, and as we are flying through it, at the end we end up in this part where you see the oil, like liquid, kind of seeping through the ground and at the end swallowing the whole city as this very dark, powerful force. So this would be the second chapter. And the third chapter, Xerodrome, also referenced to Rezenegaristani, how he sees the end, something what is after the collapse, is this infinite desert, which has in it, he calls it data dust. So it's basically just dust of data, kind of memories, something which remained. And in this chapter, we are again moving through particles. It's called point clouds. It's a 3D thing. And in these point clouds, if you look carefully, you can recognize their architecture and city and even silhouettes and shadows of people as they are moving through it. And also, we worked a little bit on that, like at the end, you are coming to something as the music also intensifies, which is in a way universe of like everything what was ever created. And it doesn't have a definite end, because also we didn't want it to just, it's kind of leads the open question of what this all is and like where it's going to continue. So yeah, I would say this about the content. And for me, this was very special experience. We showed the work also another time, like we showed the work multiple times, but the first time at Berlin Atonal was one of the strongest moments in my life, I would say, because otherwise my work before hasn't been performative. And to see this in the building with the live sound and the vocals of Hani, like her voice echoing in this building with thousands of people looking at this one visual, and also this stress of like everything which can go wrong, but at the same time this power of happening at that point in this place and everyone like seeing it and feeling it and kind of like getting this message, or maybe even not getting it, but like feeling it, was real life changing for me. So I'm really happy that you liked it, and I hope that even through the video, like even not in this amazing setting of Kraftwerk Berlin, which is really special, that people can still feel how what this work is trying to say to them. They don't have to necessarily get the what it's about, like all these references, but I hope it still carries the feeling.
Yeah, definitely, because it was such a powerful feeling for me. It's just especially the last part, the Xerodome, is it called?
It is
so powerful, it is so beautiful, and yeah, if you don't get any of the references, it's still such a beautiful experience. And even just from a computer screen, it was mesmerizing. It was honestly, I was so happy seeing that.
Thank you so much.
And I can only imagine how amazing it can be when it's live, you know, like in a big event venue. But all of the parts, they start with an image of a snake.
Exactly. This is work created by Zeynep Schilling, who also took reference from the book, which is about this. It's called a hydroglyph, translated as a snake writing in like specific way of language. But she developed like symbols for each of the chapter, which are also somehow trying to represent what the chapter is about in like one specific sign. So, and this then like unfolds in the whole video.
And how is the snake connected to the piece? What is the symbolic meaning of the snake in that context?
It's reference to the book again, because he basically writes about this snake writing. So, you know, like you can see this piece as something also visual and sonic, but it's like, when we speak also that it's a reference to the book, kind of like encouraging people to read it. I find it nice overall in work, also in my work, that you put certain reference which people don't have to understand. But then if you kind of go back to the source, you start to uncover more and more things. So this is maybe what I would say to that.
Mm-hmm.
Read it.
I'm going to change gears a little bit because the last year has been very interesting for everyone, And I would be really interested to know, has your view on life changed after 2020 or during 2020? And what was 2020 like for you?
Everything changed. Everything. Before that, like last couple of years, I've been traveling kind of nonstop. Nonstop, really. And I haven't even had like proper base. I mean, I'm from Slovakia and I'm studying in Vienna, and I was on and off like living in Berlin, but I would always spend here just a couple of days and always on the road, either doing projects or visiting exhibitions or whatever, mostly for work. And yeah, since March, I almost didn't travel. So that changed definitely a lot. And now I'm properly based in Berlin, and I really feel I have a life here, which feels very nice. Of course, I would love to travel again, but also I realized that it was a little bit too much, especially for my body. I didn't feel it in the process because I was in this like constant flow and constant movement. But only when I stopped, I realized that, yeah, actually this hasn't been so healthy. And I think it also like taught me and also other people around me and overall that it would be nice that once this is over, which I hope will be and will be soon, we can return to something which is kind of a healthy balance, you know, like also realizing maybe that much travel is not necessary like it was before, but somehow keeping it and like taking into consideration also like environmental cause of all this life which we used to have. And I mean, this is positive side for sure. With work, of course, it's not easy. It hasn't been easy, especially with the start of COVID, because everything which used to be my work was kind of not possible anymore. But I think always this moment of like crisis of limitations just make you think of the new possibilities and how to deal with it, how to survive, how to keep being creative. And I felt it already a little bit before that I want to work on more longer projects and like deeper projects which I can really dedicate to, which I'm also trying to do this year. And a lot of things fortunately were possible to do in a distance. Also my university, a lot of things which I would normally fly to have a meeting, I'm able to do it differently. Of course, in the next part, like human contact, that's something different because you cannot have like, how I would say, like fully experienced human contact through computer screen or phone screen. And that's something which I think also influenced us a lot. And I reflected on it also in recent projects. Fortunately, I have very good friends and people, collaborators here in Berlin, so I'm very happy to be here, actually. And yeah, it hasn't been easy year, but I'm trying to look at it more from positive side, like what it gave us and what is there to learn from this year and take to the future, even if hopefully the future will not have that many limitations. Let's see.
But what do you feel that we can take to the future? Mm-hmm. What do you feel we can learn? And do you think that we will learn, or do you think we have to be taught the same lesson again?
Well, it's hard to predict that. I think that's an interesting question. I think people are spoiled this in a way. And I can't even say what I think. I can only say maybe what I hope for. Because what I said already, you just see that also it works different way, that not all of this was necessary, and that some of our habits, some of our vanity can be a little bit reduced, but also like realizing which things from which we cannot have right now are important, you know, like human contact, human interaction, face-to-face interaction. And I think these things which are so important, which we know, we have to maybe reduce other things. So these things can return. And how we will learn from it to the future, how the future will be, that's something we can just imagine. And yeah, I don't know.
That's a good answer. But do you feel like we're going to carry on being more and more absorbed by technology? Or do you feel like humans are going to have enough at some point and people are going to say, you know, enough with the Zoom, enough with the screens, enough with everything. I just want to meet people. I want to touch people. I want to experience life fully and not through a technical medium.
That's very big question I'm asking, as I'm working more and more with kind of digital, and like I'm working with 3D and VR mostly, so I'm asking this often, like whether it's going more towards technology or actually the other way around. But I think this thing should always coexist, and I'm not scared of technology. Of course, I also don't want to just stay on Zoom. But we should see technology as helpful tool. Even in art, for example, in my practice of like working with VR or 3D, you know, you can create visual in VR, but I don't want people to just like sit on the computer and experience it. I want to see it, to show it in a real space, or this performance, as I said, where people can actually, even if work is created digitally, where people can connect, even if people should connect digitally, but like with some kind of something else as well, with some kind of presence. And that's a very interesting question for me when I think how the digital and the physical world can coexist. And I think there is too much fear about technology, which I also reflect on in many projects, because it's often demonized and seen as this like apocalyptic vision, which is reasonable because technology is a tool, and with every tool it's neither good or bad. It matters on the use of it. So if we use it in a good way or in a bad way, I don't want to also make like such a black and white, good and bad, of course. But, you know, like once people say like technology is bad, I find it quite stupid, because it can be very helpful. And we have this possibility to use it for enhancing, improving, and making the world and everything better. So I hope people don't have this negative or scared approach towards it. And we should also acknowledge that this time of COVID is more bearable just thanks to technology. Because the other part, like the real human interaction in some moments like this, because we have to be responsible, had to be limited. And the reason that we can still talk, or that I can still talk with most of the people I talk to, is just thanks to that. And of course, it's not like full experience, but yeah, it's still incredible.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what the situation has been like in Berlin. I know a few friends who live there, but I haven't talked to them too much. But at least in Estonia, and I'm guessing in most of the world, the last year has been very polarizing, and people are much more anxious and scared, and much more ready to get into fights, whether online or offline. And I'm not sure if you've seen something similar, but if you have, then do you think there are some things that we have focused too much on, and some things that we haven't focused enough on?
I think this polarization is always a very dangerous concept, whether it's happening online or offline. But I think time like this, where people are more isolated, more stuck on their devices or stuck in their own mind, actually, it's more fruitful period for something like that, because you don't exchange randomly. You know, like you don't come to some bar or some exhibition and exchange with people. You don't even exchange with so many people around you. And that gives bigger possibility to look only at things you want to look at, or on the things which are given to you, without searching for like bigger picture. So I think you are right that like this year has been has been quite influenced by that. But I don't think it's unbeatable. I think like people should just realize that there is always a bigger picture, and you should not ever look at this picture just from one specific standpoint. And you should always try to educate yourself, look at the things from multiple standpoints, and exchange with people, discuss and talk about issues. I mean, I know that I don't know if I can specify that much for Berlin, because even though I'm here and my friends are here, I feel that I'm still like in contact with the rest of the world. And what I look at is not just about Berlin. It's basically what is happening also elsewhere. And so cannot give you such a clear perspective on Berlin, actually, but I've observed it a lot, that there's been a lot of discussion this year also about like important issues in society. And I watched this, and it's just that I think that's good that this is happening, and kind of things are coming up on the from the surface, and everything is kind of raw and everyone sees it. But at the same time, as you're saying, the danger is when you actually watch the reactions that people, not all the people, but there is a lot of people, and those are actually people who react the most, who take very radical standpoints, where it seems that there is a discussion, but it's actually not a discussion, because in this radical standpoint, you are not able to discuss, you are not able to listen, you are just, as I say, seeing what you want to see, hearing what you want to hear, and speaking it out. And I think like the right way for this is to observe and to really create a conversation rather than a monologue, which this polarity, I think, is about.
This is such an important point, and people so often, because the radical people are the ones that are most vocal, and they're actually a small minority, but because they're the only ones speaking, then it leaves us the impression that the world is much more radical than it actually is, because most of the people are not like that. And this, yeah, it gives us a very distorted perspective. But as you said before, like, we need to have a bigger perspective and not just be pro this or anti that. And what is the bigger perspective that you have that helps you to like make sense of what is going on and doesn't leave you too anxious and afraid?
Speaking to people, exchanging with people, reading, trying to read not just one source, but kind of like multiple ways of thinking. Maybe on the first plane you agree with something, disagree with something, but this also has to be like based on real facts. Or I mean, of course, I'm also not most knowledgeable, and I have a lot of gaps in my understanding. But it's important to admit it and to try to solve it with patience, of course, but just to know that I don't know everything and I'm ready to learn, I'm ready to listen. I mean, I can put example of a project which I did a couple of years ago called Asymptote, which is also exhibited in Photographic Catalan, which is basically a project about socialism in Slovakia, which is something I've never lived through, as I was born just on like fall of socialism. And socialism as a political regime now, I mean. Basically I knew about this time, let's say, from what my parents were saying to me. Then later on I learned about this time also in the school from like what happened historically. But then we wanted to do a project about it with my collaborator, Adam Čoka Keller, who is also from Slovakia. And in this project, we interviewed or like spoke with a lot of people who lived during this time. And we were especially cautious to select people from different parts of society with different experiences. And we were talking to teachers, politicians, artists, writers, journalists, workers. And what was really impressive that we got so many different viewpoints. You know, like for some people it was a dream era, for some people it was a nightmare, but also in many different ways. And I think even like to learn from history overall, it's for me, it's not a project about history. Also for me, it was at the same time kind of getting to know something about our culture, about the previous generations, but that has a direct influence on us. And through this project, we also realize that past, it's never only history and only past, because the present and so future is based on this past. And even on the project, we kind of observed how much of this regime, of this thinking, of this behavior is still present in the society in different ways. The project is like tied to architecture. That was our original inspiration in that, because there is a lot of like post-Soviet socialist architecture in Slovakia, in Bratislava. And it really started by observing this architecture, how it feels, how it acts. And then, while making the project, seeing so much of the regime in the pattern, how even the architecture is created. So everything is in a way connected. So I think the way to seeing the bigger picture is to looking at every direction and seeing.
Yeah, this is again such an important point that we often like to think of the past in very black and white terms, like was communism good or bad, or was like whatever era in history, was it good or bad? But if you ask different people, just like you said, you're going to have different answers. And like right now, we can go to an entrepreneur and ask if communism was good or bad, and they're going to say it was bad because they couldn't do what they can now. But I can go to tens of thousands of homeless people and ask them, and they would be much happier living in communism, because at least they wouldn't be on the streets. But it's it's so easy to see the history in black and white and good and bad terms.
You know, and even in the project, we really try to show it not in a way it was good or bad, you know, like kind of like mix it together into something which is not a documentary outcome, but rather this something, I call it like fiction based on truth. So still doing some fiction, but the fiction which is based on what was happening also, and taking this story to something a little bit also slightly surreal, but to not do it as a criticism, not also do it as some kind of nostalgia and glorifying, but really to keep it in great tones, I would say, because I think the experience of almost anything is in the great tones, because as you said, there would be always people who highly appreciate it and the people who don't, I don't think anything is black and white.
Can you tell me of something that you have changed your mind on in recent past? Something that you had a strong opinion on and that it changed?
That's a really difficult question to think about so fast.
You can leave it in the back of your mind. I'll ask you a different question. I'm going to ask you about your other series called Unorganic. Mm-hmm. Which I really, really, really like. But I'm going to be honest, when I just look at the photos, I have no idea, like, what is the idea behind it, or what is the meaning of it. But it's so fascinating. Can you talk to me a little bit and explain to the listeners what this project is about?
Yes, this project was actually created as one of my like seminar work for university, where I was looking at the history and purposes of still life. So it was addition to my written work, and I created photos around it. And basically, it's kind of this study, like what the still life was for since its origin, that still life was and is, and for me it is, not only random composition of objects, but it's basically this genre where every object and the setting has its meaning. There, like in the past, there would be even these like really lexicons that this flower means that and this fruit means that. And then this still life, which is looks very decorative, would be exposed in the houses. It was actually still life didn't start as art for galleries or art institutions, but rather as something decorative, which people would put in their homes as kind of identification of who they are and how they want to be represented for the others, their guests or and so on. So it was also interesting for me how through this genre you create this like description of the character. And I've put it there with these animals. So each still life which I created is kind of describing different characteristics. For example, I don't remember right now which prints are in Tallinn. But for example, you have there this like Sphinx cat, which represents luxury, how it's sitting with this like expensive fishes and kind of beautiful luxurious objects around it, with this expression of like being totally disinterested on the, or then this different image called cruelty with the rats who are feasting on this meat, which kind of looks like their own bodies. And so I kind of just work with this like how is it possible to create a character identity through objects or kind of landscapes built from things.
And one of your works that stood out most for me, because it was so different from the others, is the series of older women with, wrinkles on their faces. Can you tell me a bit about that series as well?
Yeah, it's one of the oldest things, I think, in the exhibition, so quite early project. Often in the project, all of them, I kind of deal with something which concerns me on a personal level. So growing up in Slovakia, you have specific view on age, mostly as a woman, because it's also due to quality of life. I would say that in Slovakia, you basically don't like older people, also older women are very devaluated. They are kind of not represented in the visual culture, in the media. And I always grew up with this feeling that after a certain age, you are just like disposal, I would say. And I really saw this contrast also like studying in Vienna, where you basically see people of age having some kind of cultural life, while for example in Slovakia, you like only place where you see even like image of older person in the magazine or in advertisement is some kind of like a retirement, always with this like pity. And and that used to really affect me quite a lot, my own fear of age or like aging. And for this project, what I did, it was mostly, again, for me, access to meet and speak to certain kind of people. So I contacted women from Slovakia, also did a little bit in Berlin, which inspired me, which I then invited into the studio, and we spoke how the aging feels for them, how they see themselves. And it's all of these women who really... And the conversation we came to were amazing and gave me a lot of confidence and totally destroyed this fear for me. There is like subtitle, which is like youth has no age. But I think one of the images, which is also in Fotografiska, is portrait of Sonia Červená. She is, I think, 96 now, and she's she's opera singer and actress, and she's still performing. And wow. I first saw her in stage. I worked a lot with theater, and I saw her performing and then asked people in theater, like, I really have to get in touch with her. And I shot with her next day. And to meet somebody with this strength and vitality and desire to live and to still see it as like full life was something which influenced me a lot.
This is so beautiful. I'm so happy that I asked that question. You mentioned twice that many of the things that you work on are things that you are dealing with in your own life. Can you tell me what are you dealing with right now? What is the like the biggest problem or puzzle in your mind that you're trying to solve?
Okay. I mean, for example, I will speak again through the project. It's, I think, something what you mentioned also a little bit. I would say reality. What is reality? What is, and what is construct? What of what we perceive, what we take, is actually what is, and what is fabricated, either by media, society, our own minds, our own ideals and prejudices. And this is very important question for me right now. I'm working with this question also on upcoming project, which is a multisensory experience, which deals with specific societal topic connected to environment, empathy, and so on. It has multiple chapters. Now we are working just on the first one, and it basically, it works with all the senses. So you are getting different information by each sensory channel, and you kind of have to like find the ways between them. And for me, even sensory experience is interface through which we perceive reality as such. But also that is not reality as it is. And for me, this is the symbol. And we have to kind of like then construct it in our minds. And for me, this is the symbol of also this big issue, which we are experiencing nowadays, how people form their opinions on which they act and how much of their worldview can be actually constructed and manipulated, and how important it is to realize this.
This is so fascinating. I'm very, very happy that you're working on that. It's, yeah, trying to figure out reality is, you know, it's going to take 2-3 weeks and then you're done, I think. That's a joke.
Yeah.
But
yeah, no, I mean, I know that, you know, also with all of my projects, it's, I don't look at them as solutions. It's more a study, interest, and rather posing questions than giving answers.
Yeah,
so I'm not thinking I will like solve it also artists. Unfortunately, sometimes I suffer by it. It's not about solving problems that much. It's more about addressing them and questioning things and challenging into thinking, which then hopefully eventually can lead to action, either even on a personal level, and hopefully maybe even something bigger.
I'm going to ask you a few more questions and then we can wrap up. Can you name some artists that inspired you when you were growing up?
Yes, many people inspired me, many things inspired me, all the close people around me inspired me the most, but from like bigger names and references, because I guess that's what you want to hear. Two people I would pick is maybe, could be more also, I'm as I said to you, I'm very much inspired by literature. Okay, maybe I can name also some of that. But visually, I'm quite inspired by director Roy Anderson and another film director, Andrzej Żławski. They are different also, but I think both have quite a big influence on me visually. Then a lot of, actually not that much photography. I'm looking more at painting, sculpture, film. And as I said, text. I love text from Michel Foucault, Susan Sontag, and many other things. It's usually difficult for me to do this because there is so many things. So I feel in danger of like picking few. I'm really reducing the others. But this would be like first things coming to my mind.
And what is the best advice that you've ever received from somebody else?
Oof, so many advices to consider. You are really, which I love. I love questions which I cannot answer immediately, which need a thought process, because I think those are important ones. Good advices I received to have courage, I guess, to to have courage to go deeper and to not get disappointed by things which does not resolve itself immediately, to continue in the journey. I'm a real believer of the journey and process. Always search without fear of not getting answers, still search and see what's there. A lot of things coming to my mind, but I think mostly support in this going into unknown kind of darkness, which is not darkness, which is actually full of light, but you have to search for it and like not be afraid.
And have you come up with an answer to my question about having changed your mind about something?
Yeah, this is such a difficult one. Maybe let me think for a second. Change my mind every day about many things. That's maybe I would answer more general, because nothing specific comes to my mind. That I always see myself as this like ever changing, ever developing. I'm not afraid of change of mind. I'm not afraid to speak to someone who has totally different opinion. I'm not deaf towards it. I want to be open. I want to be confronted. I want to be reacted to. And so, as I'm saying, it happens on like everyday basis. And I love criticism, dialogue. And there are people who challenge me so much, which I love, because I know they are doing it to expand my knowledge and understanding. And that's also what I'm trying to do, hopefully, with my work and with my presence. So... sorry, we have to speak about this another time, because I would, this is one of the things I would really have to think.
No, but this is, Evelyn, this is the best answer you could have ever given. This is a very, very beautiful answer. I'm going to ask you.
Yeah, I think we have to be open, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you one last question. What is it right now that excites you the most, or what drives you the most? What gets you up from the bed and really makes you want to do things and carry on with life?
Curiosity about the world around me, about the mind, also world that is bigger, this world of like ideas and imagination. I don't usually have a problem about not having something to be excited about. I think I'm quite sensitive person, and I just want to know more. And the more you know, the more you know you don't know, and the more you want to know on every level, whether it's like informational or emotional. I always feel this hunger to experience things and share things with people. That's also, I guess, why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I'm doing it for myself, but also not only. And to kind of search and be able to communicate it and then continue it in it and see reaction and just being on this journey of discovering things about you and things around you, that makes me to wake up every day.
Beautiful, Evelyn. Thank you very, very much. As a last thing, would you like to tell people, if they want to find you online, how can they find you? And if you have any last wishes or greetings to the listeners?
Yes, you can see my work online. You can see it, for example, on my website, which is not so updated. I'm sorry. It's www.evelynbenchichova.com, my name. Or you can see my work, not only my work, but more also my inspiration and process and the fragments of life on my Instagram, Evelyn, and how it's called, underline Bentisova. That's my profile. And I would say just these two things, even though I have also some other platforms, but I'm not updating them at all. So here you can have a look. Please don't Google me, because there is a lot of things which are not so not so representative of my work right now. I mean, you can Google me if you want to, but if you want to have my view on it.
I wouldn't have Googled you before you said that, but now I want to Google you just to see what comes up. God.
No, it's mostly like very old things mixed with some new things. And I don't think it's really like current viewpoint, but if you want, do it also. I'm not in refusal of that either. And I hope you enjoyed the exhibition. I hope you take some time to look at the images or the videos. And as I said, it's mirror, so feel free to mirror yourself in it and don't look at it just as something mirroring me, but also something which you can reflect on and which should reflect you when you look at it closely.
Evelyn, thank you very, very much. That was a very beautiful conversation. Thank you so much for coming, and I hope you all the best for the coming year.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure for me as well.
Beautiful. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.